policy preventing unvaccinated individuals from riding public transportation in Metro Manila set to be enforced. We'll discuss this with Transport Undersecretary Artemio Tuason Jr. And we'll also get the side of commuters group Alt Mobility. The World Health Organization warns half of Europe's population could be infected with the Omicron variant in the coming weeks. A new World Economic Forum survey shows a dim outlook for global economic recovery. And the Philippine Privacy Commission orders the Commission on Elections to explain the alleged hacking of its servers. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. Hey, thanks for joining us. And for those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Our top story, no vax, no ride. That's the Philippine government's new policy for commuters in Metro Manila, further tightening the noose on the unvaccinated. President Rodrigo Duterte ordered the restriction of the movement of individuals unvaccinated against COVID-19 due to the current surge. The only exemptions are persons with medical conditions that have kept them from being vaccinated and those buying essential goods and services. The policy will be imposed while Metro Manila is under Alert Level 3, which is currently in effect, or higher. It will take effect immediately after publication in the Official Gazette or in newspapers. All right, for a reaction to the no vax, no ride policy in the NCR, we're now joined by Ira Cruz. He's a director of commuters group Alt Mobility. Ira, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it coming to this show.
No problem. Hello, Carmina. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
All good.
All right. Okay. No vaccination, no ride policy of the Department of Transportation. It's been called draconian by Professor Walden Bello. In fact, he went further on to say that it's draconian and stupid, that it's all about, it should be about segregation and not repression. But I want to know what you think. What do you think about this new directive?
Well, Carmina, first of all, we support calls for everyone to get vaccinated and for everyone to follow proper protocols. But we just can't deny public transportation without addressing several other factors that could lead to people being unvaccinated. We need to look into the availability and efficiency of vaccination efforts. You know, we continue to hear, Carmina, stories of people waiting an entire day at vaccination sites. So you can just imagine what this means for daily wage earners. You know, we need a more organized approach to interrupting the spread of the virus. Close to 2 years into the pandemic, Carmina, we have yet to see a proper coordinated contact tracing system. I think I shared some photos with your team earlier that, you know, DOTR has TRACE. It also has Stay Safe. And then a myriad of other contact tracing solutions, and none of which is coordinated. Do we even have data where the virus is being contracted? And when you restrict access to public transportation, how will people get to vaccination sites if they want to get vaccinated? So we also need to look into the supply of public transportation. Even before the pandemic, the supply of public transportation is already lacking. I remember I sat with you and talked back before the pandemic to talk about the Commuter Bill of Rights. And with a continued shortage of public transportation, is there actual physical distancing or ventilation in our public transportation?
Yeah. Well, I just want to go back to the point that you made about data. Do we have the data? Undersecretary Maria Rosario Vergeri was here on the show, I think, a couple of days back, and she admitted that the daily cases that they post, that's just a fraction of the real situation. So you got to wonder if that's a data that they're working on and they know that it's just a fraction of the real situation and they don't know what the real number is, how can they even begin to map out a semblance of a strategy to combat the current surge that we're in, Ira?
Right. So that's where we're coming from when we say that there has to be a more systemic, a more organized approach to interrupting the spread of the virus. And it cannot be by restricting people from taking public transportation. Public transportation is very critical to the life of a city, to the life of people that are working in cities. And to restrict that is also very discriminatory. Because what happens? You're only discriminating the movement of people that are taking public transportation. What about people that are riding private vehicles? How come they're allowed to go around the city without any checks? Just over the weekend, I passed a checkpoint while riding my bike. And the checkpoint only stops people in motorcycles and bicycles to check for vaccination cards. And so it's very discriminating. So and to think majority of our workers, majority of people in Metro Manila take public transportation. So it's very discriminatory, and we need more humane measures, not punitive ones, to address the spread of the virus.
So how do you do that? Because on the one hand, you do have to protect those who are vaccinated as well. Right. So what did the government fail to see here? You kind of elaborated on that a while ago, but what is the step forward? What can be done from your vantage point?
Well, number one, is it really easy for people to get vaccinated? As I mentioned earlier, we still hear stories of people spending an entire day in vaccination sites waiting to get vaccinated. Is there a proper coordinated contact tracing system? I traveled recently, at least towards the end of the year, and I had to download Trace, which is a DOTR contact tracing solution. DOTR runs our MRTs, and they're using Stay Safe. You have cities like Pasig with Pasig Pass. You have cities like Valenzuela with Valtrace. And none of these things are coordinated. Is there proper contact tracing? Are we able to find out where the viruses are being spread? You are punishing people that are taking public transportation without completely understanding the picture. Is it in workplaces? Is it in homes? And there comes in mass testing again. Are we doing proper mass testing, or are we just, you know, picking on public transportation and assuming that public transportation is responsible for the spread of the virus? And that's not fair. It cannot discriminate. We must not discriminate. And we need to come up with more humane policies to realistically address the spread of the virus.
Of course, we're talking about the right to travel here and, you know, restricting the movement of the unvaccinated. But how might this directive even affect the economy? You've been hearing a lot of business groups in the past days saying no to alert level 4. Let's stick with this. There is mobility. There is voluntary shutdown of some businesses. And that seems to be working. Not a lot of people are out there in the streets. But then you have this other directive. How do you think this might impact on the economy? And did the DOTR fail to see that as well?
You know, Karina, majority of our workers, people that make sure that we have food on our tables, people that make sure that our facilities are safe, these are people that take public transportation. These are people that go around the city without the benefit or privilege of riding in a car. And then when you restrict their movement just because they don't have access to vaccines, or just because they can't spend an entire day waiting for their vaccines, for them to be given vaccines in their respective LGUs, that's when we're saying that it's not fair. We're coming up with very punitive measures in addressing the spread of the virus. But what DOTR and the national government in particular is failing to do is coming up with a systemic and an organized way to approach the spread of the virus. Public transportation is just probably one, but what about testing? What about proper contact tracing? What about the availability of vaccines? What about not discriminating and actually promoting active transportation? There is a lack of public transportation. I shared photos with your team earlier, and just when I was going around the city in between the Christmas break and New Year's, I saw several buses that are bursting at the seams. You know, the LTFRB also needs to make sure that there is proper supply of public transportation. And this is not new. Yeah. The supply of public transportation has already been lacking even before the pandemic. And you can imagine that at this point, it's not just about mobility, it's also a health issue.
We're going to talk to the DOTR in a bit, Ira. And I'm already guessing that they're going to say, but there are exemptions. And I'm going to read them to you, the exemptions included in the directive. And I want to ask you what you think of those exemptions. First, it says that persons with medical conditions that prevent their full COVID-19 vaccination, as shown by a duly signed medical certificate with a name and contact details of their doctor. If they present that, then they can ride. What do you think about that?
You know, Carmina, it all boils down to implementation. Can it really be implemented on the ground? How do you verify these things? As early as now, we're already hearing of fake vaccination cards and fake certificates without a unified system that coordinates vaccination, contact tracing. There really is no way for us to be able to validate. Again, these are very punitive, but does it really make sense? Does it really make sense on the ground? Is it really sufficient to stem the spread of the virus? Again, what it is to me is just an additional step that just makes, you know, public transportation in the Philippines that much more difficult. And it already is very difficult and complicated.
There's another exemption there. The order also says persons who will buy essential goods and services such as, but not limited to, water, medicine, medical devices, public utilities, energy, work, and medical and dental necessities as shown by a duly issued barangay health pass or other proof to justify travel. I mean, you're already shaking your head there, Ira.
That's a very wide net. That's casting a very wide net. I can just say, you know what? I want to buy water. And who's to say that I'm not passing by my friend's house or the mall afterwards? It's not a I understand where they're coming from, but they need to approach this on a more systemic and a more organized and a more realistic point of view. And then, you know, you can already see when you ride the MRTs, they have a physical logbook, Carmina. Can you imagine writing down your name, your personal information in a logbook in the MRT? That's already one step in order for you to take the MRT. And then there's this process where you have to present documents from a barangay. Can you imagine? How do I get to a barangay in the first place if I'm unvaccinated? What if I'm heading towards a vaccination site? How will I get to the how will I get to the barangay office to get my certificate? Do I have to walk? Do we even have sidewalks that support walking in the Philippines? You know, we don't have sidewalks. Service contracting has been pulled. They pulled the plug on service contracting, which could have been a way to increase the supply in public transportation. We're working with the government, and hopefully they will provide sufficient funding in the GAA for more bike lanes to support active transportation. You know, these are things that they should be talking about, the DOTR, I mean, rather than restricting access to public transportation, which is very important to cities and very important to people making a living in cities.
Then what then do they do with the president's order? The president himself said, restrict the movement of the unvaccinated. He got the DOTR just really following the president's orders there.
You know, as an alter ego of the president, I could imagine that the cabinet secretaries are the president's closest advisors, and I do wish that they can express this concern to the president, and hopefully the president can reconsider, but also gather everyone else that's involved in making sure that we're able to realistically stem the spread of the virus.
Right, Ira Cruz there, Director of Alt Mobility, PH. Nice to see you again, Ira. Continue to keep safe and you take care. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Carmina.
Thank you. All right, moving on with the rest of the news today. The Philippines' total COVID-19 caseload breaches the 3 million mark. That's after the health department logged 28,000 new cases. The number of active infections now stands at 181,000. That's the highest since September 18 last year. 219 more patients died, while over 4,000 have recovered. The Philippines COVID-19 treatment chief says hospitals in Metro Manila still have enough manpower, even as many health workers get sidelined by the virus. According to Health Undersecretary Leopoldo Vega, more than 7% of health workers in the NCR are currently under quarantine. But while the rest are still able to go to work, Vega says some adjustments should be made in the face of an ongoing surge.
One of the things that the hospital administration should do would be to make sure that they are able to deploy and contract some of their services from their outpatient special services so that the deployment towards these COVID areas will be there.
The current number of patients admitted at the Philippines' main COVID-19 referral hospital already nearing its peak. The director of the Philippine General Hospital, Dr. Gerardo Legazpi, says they have 301 patients at the moment. But he says the biggest difference in the latest influx of admissions is that majority of patients have mild COVID cases. Legazpi points out it's the healthcare workers who are the most affected in the current surge.
Comparing it with the surge in September, where we had 381 infected healthcare workers, and we were able to make make the processes work, even open our outpatient department. It's really a problem more of respirators and high flow nasal and tocilizumab. But now we have a 973 number of healthcare workers infected. So the limitation now is the ability to man the areas. Despite the lower severity of actual COVID, the new one that was given out by the Department of Health and IATF allowed us to call in our doctors and our nurses. And you know what happened? The day after we did that, 93 doctors were able to come back. And 40, around 35 nurses were able to report back.
Despite rising COVID-19 cases in the Philippines, the Interior Department says it won't be able to hire additional contact tracers this year. Interior Undersecretary Jonathan Malaya explains Congress slashed their 2022 budget for contact tracing to 250 million pesos. He says that's not even enough to keep paying the thousands of contact tracers they hired last year to augment the teams of local government units.
Ito yung aming problema ngayon. Paano pagkakasyahin yung 250 million for the 15,000 contact tracers that we hired last year. Yeah. We already talked to the local government units and we asked them to absorb first the contact tracers that are now with them, because under the Amandanas ruling, many of the LGUs have increased internal revenue allotment. So we're asking them to absorb first in the meantime those contact tracers which could not be renewed by the DILG because of the slash of our budget for contact tracing.
The operations of local government units in Cavite as well as COVID-19 vaccinations there affected by the surge in cases. Our very own Michael Deliso now joins us on the line for the details. Mike, what can you tell us?
Hi, Carmina. Yes, several city halls and vaccination sites in Cavite province have temporarily stopped operations due to the wave of COVID-19 infections among city employees and vaccination workers. The General Trias City Hall was closed starting today, Wednesday, until Friday, after 105 of its employees tested positive for COVID-19, while their over 300 close contacts have to undergo quarantine. The closure, according to the city government, is meant to prevent the spread of virus to the public and other employees. Vaccination was also suspended at the vaccination sites in General Trias Convention and Cultural Center, Robinson's Place General Trias, and Vista Mall General Trias for the whole week because many members of the vaccination team were also infected. The city government said it will release a new schedule for those who are set for second dose. Meanwhile, the Cavite City Hall has over 130 employees who tested positive in antigen tests. No announcement yet on its effect to the City Hall operation. However, the vaccination was already suspended since Monday. In Bacoor City, 190 employees tested positive for COVID-19. Bacoor Mayor Lanny Mercado said the City Hall operation will continue with limited employees. Those who are COVID positive, she said, only have mild symptoms and some are still working from home. In Silang Town, Mayor Cory Poblete is currently recovering from COVID-19 along with other municipal employees. All government offices, however, are still operational. And that's the latest from Cavite. Back to you, Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Michael Deliso there joining us on the line. Mike, you take care and keep safe. Moving on, despite the COVID-19 surge, the Commission of Higher Education says the second phase of limited face-to-face classes in areas under Alert Level 3 should push through on January 31st. But as Ana Perez tells us, it's the teachers themselves who are calling for a break.
First-year college student Grizel had flu-like symptoms during the last week of December. Now that she has recovered, she decided to get her requirements at PUP, where she completed senior high school, but classes and transactions in the university are suspended amid a rise in COVID-19 cases. Grizel said this is similar with the situation at her school, pamantasan ng lungsod ng Maynila.
Kapag pahinga po kami ng sandali, and then gagamitin ko po yung time na yun para mag-review po para sa finals namin.
PUP and PLM are among the many universities, colleges, and private schools that have suspended classes, whether distance learning or face-to-face classes, due to the increase in the number of students and school personnel who have tested positive for COVID-19 or who have flu-like symptoms. The Coordinating Council of Private Educational Associations of the Philippines, or COCOPEA, said most of its member schools in NCR have announced class suspensions.
Parang ang average ngayon, at least one member of the family ang mayroong COVID. So whether it's parents or the children, syempre mag-isolate kayo, and then parents would have to be, diba, looking after their kids, and yung kids, lalo na kung sila affected, they cannot go to school. So request ng parents, actually, karamihan sa mga schools. That's why they suspended.
Teachers are now asking for a 2-week health break for Alert Level 3 areas. The Alliance of Concerned Teachers says the outbreak is making it difficult for both teachers and students to hold classes, and the academic break is the only humane choice to give them a chance to recover. For CHED Chairman Popoy De Vera, the decision lies with each higher education institution. De Vera says HEIs can declare a health or academic break on their own based on their situation. COCOPEA believes a timeout is needed to ramp up vaccination of teachers and students.
It's not lockdowns, yung school closures will not be the answer. So sa atin, itutuloy yung plano, but we have to focus more on vaccination, no? Including the younger kids. Increase yung vaccination, use more schools as vaccination sites, prioritize those in the schools, no? Students, teachers, school personnel.
For colleges and universities, CHED said 30% capacity for in-person classes are allowed in areas under Alert Level 3 and 50% capacity for areas under Alert Level 2. Ara Perez, ABS-CBN.
Over in the U.S., top health officials defend government's pandemic response as COVID cases and hospitalizations across the country rise at an unprecedented rate. Here's the full story.
And we're doing the best we possibly can.
Top U.S. health officials defended the Biden administration's response to the unrelenting pandemic in front of a Senate committee Tuesday as the number of daily COVID cases soared to yet another new high and hospitalizations remained at a record level. President Biden's chief medical advisor, Dr. Anthony Fauci.
This is an extraordinary virus, the likes of which we have not seen even close to in well over 100 years. It is a very wily virus. It has fooled everybody all the time. From the time it first came in to Delta to now Omicron, very unpredictable, and we're doing the best we possibly can.
Biden, who has been accused of focusing on vaccinations at the expense of testing and support for struggling healthcare systems, told reporters on Tuesday he was confident the country was on the right track to fight the pandemic. His comments came as the U.S. reported 1.35 million new coronavirus infections on Monday, according to a Reuters tally, the highest daily total for any country in the world. And the number of hospitalized COVID patients also hit an all-time high, having doubled in the past 3 weeks. While the Omicron variant is potentially less severe, health officials have warned that the sheer number of infections could further strain hospital systems, some of which have already suspended elective procedures as they struggle to handle the increase in patients and staff shortages. Dr. Janet Woodcock, acting commissioner of the Food and Drug Administration, gave senators a stark assessment of the challenges.
I think it's hard to process what's actually happening right now, which is most people are going to get COVID. All right, and what we need to do is make sure the hospitals can still function, transportation, you know, other essential services are not disrupted while this happens.
Looks like we might be cresting over that peak.
But there are signs that the tide might be turning at least in some places, like New York, where Governor Kathy Hochul said that while daily infections remain high, the rate of increase is slowing.
A glimmer of hope in a time when we desperately need that.
And in Chicago, the 7-day average of cases showed indications of a decrease last week, dropping 8% since the prior week, city data showed.
More than half of the European population seem to be infected with the Omicron variant within 6 to 8 weeks. That projection coming from the World Health Organization after Europe saw its number of cases double in just the first week of 2022. It adds, although current approved vaccines continue to provide adequate protection, Omicron can still overload healthcare systems.
Data collated in recent weeks confirms that Omicron is highly transmissible because the mutations it has enable it to adhere to human cells more easily. And it can infect even those who have been previously infected or vaccinated. Allow me to reiterate that the currently approved vaccines do continue to provide good protection against severe disease and death, including for Omicron. Because of the unprecedented scale of transmission, we are now seeing rising COVID-19 hospitalizations. It is challenging health systems and service delivery in many countries where Omicron has spread at speed and threatens to overwhelm in many more.
The WHO also says the virus continues to evolve quickly and has not reached a point where it can be called an endemic. I'm going to take a break now. Up ahead, the National Privacy Commission orders the Commission on Elections to explain the alleged hacking of its servers. More on that when we come back. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. And we're back. You're still with Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. A new policy preventing unvaccinated individuals from riding public transportation in Metro Manila set to be enforced. The World Health Organization warns half of Europe's population could be infected with the Omicron variant in the coming weeks. A new World Economic Forum survey shows a dim outlook for global economic recovery. And the Philippine Privacy Commission orders the Commission on Elections to explain the alleged hacking of its servers. Back with more news, Vice Presidential Bet Walden Bello slams government's no-vax and no-ride policy in the National Capital Region. Bello said, while vaccination certificates should be checked, the rights of the unvaccinated should still be respected. He proposes segregating the unvaccinated when it comes to public transportation. Joining us now is the Undersecretary of the DOTR, Undersecretary Artemio Tuason Jr. Undersecretary, good afternoon to you and thank you for joining us today.
Good morning, Carmina. Good afternoon, I mean, Carmina.
Oh, you have been, this directive has been getting a lot of criticisms online. Professor Bello said it's draconian. He even called it stupid. We just had Ira Cruz of Alt Mobility on the show. He said it's punitive. Let me ask you, what were you thinking when you drafted this directive?
When Secretary Art Tugade signed the department order yesterday, the very main initiative that he had for this was to protect the riding public from the new variant of the COVID-19 virus, which is the Omicron virus, Omicron variant. As we all know, the Omicron variant is very transmissible and especially in enclosed places like public transportation. Also, it is his way of supporting the government's drive for to have our people vaccinated.
Yeah, but we understand that. But it's also punitive, according to Ira Cruz. How is this not repressive? How is this not punitive?
Actually, Carmina, if you will already look, this DO is only effective in the National Capital Region, wherein the vaccination rate is already at around 91%. So very little people will be affected by this department order. at the same time, we will be able to protect the commuters from transmission of the virus and to keep the public transportation safe. We are not limiting the right to travel of our people. What we're merely limiting right now, for the moment, due to the current situation, is the right is not the right to travel, but rather the use of public transportation.
But then, how is that not anti-poor? How can people, for example, who don't have their own vehicles, travel from point A to point B if they're unvaccinated for one reason or another? Only those who have cars, only those who have motorcycles or bikes can do that?
Well, they always have a choice to be vaccinated, Carmina. They can always get vaccinated and they will be able to use our public transportation already. Like I said earlier, this is our support for the vaccination drive of the government.
Let me just raise a point that Ira Cruz made a while ago. Let's say a person is unvaccinated, but he's on his way to get vaccinated. What happens then?
One of the exceptions to the no vaccination, no ride policy is for medical reasons. If you can show that you have a vaccination scheduled for that day, you will be allowed to use the public transport.
What if a parent, for example, is vaccinated? With that parent is a minor, not vaccinated, but has a medical appointment, what happens then?
People with medical appointments are likewise exempted from the department order. They will be allowed to travel.
You said you're not limiting, you're only trying to protect the riding public. But it seems like you've also cast a wide net when it comes to the exemptions. Like persons who will buy essential goods and services, such as but not limited to water, medicine, food, medical devices, public utilities, energy, work, and medical and dental necessities as shown by a duly signed barangay health pass or other proof to justify travel. I mean, that's quite a wide net. And who's to say that if I present you with something, you're the checker, how would you know if it's fake or not?
Well, as far as the exemptions are concerned, Carmina, we merely follow the exemptions given by the IATF resolutions on the matter. So those are all based on the IATF policies and who are exempted from going out during alert levels. The department also is also just effective during alert level 3 or higher. As to the validity of the proof that they present to us, as proof of their barangay health pass, then we will just have to rely on the honesty of these people. And if people are caught showing proof of vaccination which are fake, then there are appropriate penalties already as issued already by the other agencies for this.
Let's say you're unvaccinated, you need to travel, you still have to go to the barangay health office or barangay hall to do that?
Yes, the barangays have already issued the barangay health pass, which allows all at least one individual per household to be able to go out and to buy their necessities for the household.
And are you completely sure that that's being implemented as we speak?
Well, we have to presume the regularity of the performance of the duties of our LGUs. So we are relying on that.
What do you say to the criticism that this wasn't well thought of? That, as we said, it's punitive, it's draconian, as Ira Cruz and Professor Walden Bellio has said. We understand that you are following the president's orders, but could there have been any other way but this?
Of course, these people are entitled to their own opinion as to this. No? As any other policy, there will always be detractors. But rest assured that this was very well thought of. We had several meetings on this. We discussed every aspect of this. Secretary Tugade met us for several times discussing the merits, the pros and cons of this policy. And it has come to we have come to the conclusion that this policy is valid and that it will help protect our people from the virus.
The policy is valid. It would help protect the riding public. But how are you going to implement it? Give us a picture. Give us a clear picture. Let's say it's what? Rush hour in the morning. People are lining up to get that ride to go to work. Who's going to check each and every person?
That's right. For the rail sector, it will be easy. Before they can enter the terminals, They will have to already show their vaccination cards and before they can ride the trains. That will be for MRT, LRT. For the jeeps, we will have the LTO, the LPG, LTFRB, the IAC, and HPG, the Highway Patrol Group. And we will also be seeking the assistance of the PNP to enforce this. There will be periodic checks in different areas around Metro Manila to see if the people inside the public transport, the jeeps and the buses, all have their vaccination certificates.
And if, for example, one passenger in a jeepney was able to ride, even if he was unvaccinated, who's going to be sanctioned? What's going to happen?
Yes, if you will notice under the department order, the person or the entity that is supposed to enforce it is either the operator or the driver of the public transport. It is not the passenger who will be penalized. If at all the penalty that will be given to the passenger is he or she will be asked to get down from the public transport. But then the operator or the jeepney who allowed him or her to board the public transport will be the one that will be penalized under the existing regulations of the regulating body over the transport mode.
How do you then explain that to the operator when all he wanted really was another passenger to get a few more, you know, pesos in?
Well, yes, of course. But as you well know, they are all operating under a franchise. And the franchise dictates that they follow the rules and regulations. The franchise is not really a right. It's a privilege given to them. And so they have to follow the rules and regulations of the franchise and of the regulating bodies issuing the franchise.
So you're pushing through with this despite the backlash that you're receiving?
Definitely, we are pushing through with this. The department order was signed yesterday by Secretary Artugade, January 11. It was published today in a newspaper of general circulation, and it provides that upon publication in a newspaper of general publication, it will already be effective. But what we are doing right now is we are like having a soft implementation of the same, just so that the public will be informed, the commuters will be informed, and they will be prepared for it. Then the actual implementation, as ordered by Secretary Tugade, will be on Monday.
Do you even know, Undersecretary, how many are unvaccinated?
Right now, the data that we last saw for the NCR is that about 91% of the population in the NCR had already been vaccinated. Apart from this, there are those that are not qualified for vaccination. So it's really a very small part already of the NCR who are unvaccinated.
So you didn't.
And we're encouraging these people. Yes.
So you didn't even have to make this directive if it's just a small percentage.
Well, we still have had to do this because we are trying to encourage the others who are unvaccinated to be vaccinated. This is our support for the government's program.
So also, why couldn't you just have come up with a program, offering free rides for those who are unvaccinated, ferrying them from their homes to the vaccination centers in order to encourage them to get the jab?
That's already being done. Actually, other agencies are already doing that. The DOH is doing that. We had our own in the transport sector. We had our own vaccination initiatives already for that. And the LGUs are doing that also. So it's a matter of what we don't want to happen is that the vaccinated and unvaccinated are commixing in public transport because we don't want the public transportation to be the vector for the transmission of the virus.
So what happens? What happens then to the unvaccinated who wants to get from point A to point B? What's the game plan there? Are you just going to leave them by the roadside?
What do you mean? If they are able to ride?
If they're not able to ride.
Well,
if they're not able to present proof,
they always have the option to be vaccinated.
No, but let's say they're there on this day. They don't get to get on that ride. Do you even have a plan B, like ferrying them still giving them access to government services, but just not with the riding public who are vaccinated? Did you think
about that? Yeah, we are, Carmina, we are all looking at those options right now, no, to have a separate, having separate buses for unvaccinated. But at the moment, because of the high percentage of vaccinated people here, we are just looking at limiting the use of the public transport for vaccinated persons only.
But shouldn't because government services should be available to all.
Mm-hmm. We're looking at all those options right now.
When are you planning to implement this, Undersecretary?
We are considering it. I have no timeline for you on that, but we are discussing it right now. And we're also looking at the resources that we have right now for this, for being able to offer that, if we decide to offer the same.
And the criticisms that you've been getting, are you just looking at that as criticisms, or are you listening to what the people have been saying?
Actually, the policy, all policies of the Department of Transportation as mandated by Secretary Tugade are things that are considered and evaluated constantly. We're constantly reviewing it. We listen to the criticisms. We listen to the suggestions of the public. And if there is a need to amend or even to change, or if needed, if to rescind the policy, then we will do it if it's justified.
All right. And do you think that the criticisms that you're getting now are justified?
As of now, Carmina, we think we are doing a good and a right thing. It is a valid exercise.
I have to leave it at that. Undersecretary Artemio Tuason Jr. of the DOTR, we appreciate you coming to the show. Take care and you keep safe.
Thank you. Thank you. You too, Carmina. Thank you.
Thanks. Appreciate it. More news now. The National Privacy Commission orders the Commission on Elections to explain the alleged hacking of its servers. The NPC says the COMELEC must address the allegations made in a Manila Bulletin article and determine whether personal data were indeed compromised in the reported hack. It also directed the poll body to conduct its own probe. The NPC also set a virtual meeting with COMELEC and Manila Bulletin on January 25th. To discuss the matter. As for Manila Bulletin's tech editor, he admits they were not able to verify the screenshots provided by their source about the supposed hack. The screenshots include the COMELEC's Active Directory and a file containing vote counting machine pins.
You can Photoshop these things. Mm-hmm. But there's this file, it's in PDF, 44 pages. I sent the screenshot to the COMELEC. If the COMELEC says that there's no hacking incident, because they will just look at the files that I sent and denied everything. Ay, walang hacking yan eh. Kailangan naming malaman kung totoo ba. We sent them the information. Dapat sinagot nila yung tanong namin.
Going to take a break now. Still ahead, World Economic Forum members see a dim outlook for global economic recovery. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Back with World News, Argentina rose under a historic heat wave. Temperatures there soared to as high as 45 degrees Celsius, making the country the hottest place on the planet on Tuesday. In the capital city, Buenos Aires, hundreds of thousands of people are without electricity after power grids failed under the intense heat. Weather officials warn the heat wave driven by the La Niña weather pattern could go on for days. They also point to climate change as one of the culprits of this extreme heat. U.S. President Joe Biden makes an impassioned plea for voting rights legislation that has been stalled in Congress. Biden called the legislation a battle for the soul of America, putting it on par with a fight against racial segregation. He said if no breakthrough on the legislation can be achieved, Democratic senators should change the rules to override Republican opposition. This is Biden's most direct plea to date for the Senate to change its rules.
Hear me plainly. The battle for the soul of America is not over. We must stand strong and stand together to make sure January 6th marks not the end of democracy, but the beginning of a renaissance of our democracy. You know, for the right to vote and to have that vote counted is democracy's threshold liberty. Without it, nothing is possible. But with it, anything is possible.
a dim outlook for global economic recovery. A new survey shows only 1 in 10 World Economic Forum members expects global recovery to accelerate over the next 3 years. More in this report.
Welcome to
the outlook for global recovery is gloomy, according to the World Economic Forum on Tuesday. In a poll of nearly 1,000 business, government and academic leaders, only 1 in 10 expects the global recovery to accelerate over the next 3 years. Climate change was seen as the number one danger by respondents. Extreme weather was considered the world's biggest risk in the short term and a failure of climate action in the medium and long term. Peter Geiger, Zurich Insurance Chief Risk Officer, said the global health crisis has affected the world's ability to address these environmental challenges.
Reducing the attention and focus needed for governments to take effective and quick climate action, halving greenhouse gas emissions in the next decade and achieving the net zero transition by 2050, or risking massive disruption from the consequences of a materially warmer climate.
And that was not the only fallout. Sadia Zahidi, the WEF's managing director, said mental health deterioration was among the top 5 areas that worsened the most over the course of the last 2 years.
Governments have a balancing act to work with. In the short term, there are a number of economic transitions that they also need to manage. The second area in which they're having to do a balancing act is around jobs and social cohesion.
The WEF's report also highlights 4 areas of emerging risks, including cybersecurity, a disorderly climate transition, migration pressures, and competition in space.
And liftoff.
The prospect of 70,000 satellite launches in coming decades, in addition to space tourism and a lack of regulation, raises risks of collisions and increasing debris in space.
From web separation.
The report is published each year ahead of the annual WEF meeting in Davos. But this year's event was postponed until mid-2022 due to the spread of the Omicron variant.
The U.S. economy no longer needs aggressive stimulus. That's according to Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell during a congressional hearing that pointed to his likely confirmation for a second term as America's top central banker. Powell expects the U.S. to power through its latest surge in COVID cases, saying any impact on the economy will likely not derail the Fed's plans to tighten monetary policy.
And so I expect the economy to continue to be able to deal with these outbreaks. I think it is likely, though, if the experts are right and Omicron is going to go through really quickly and peak perhaps within a month and then come down after that, I think it's likely you will see lower hiring and perhaps a pause in growth and that kind of thing. But it should be short-lived. It should be. And then the economy, the forecast for the rest of the year, certainly for the next quarter or two, would be a very positive one, very positive.
Economists expect the Fed to raise interest rates 3 to 4 times this year. Those hikes would come on top of the Fed's tapering, which would end its bond purchases by March. Globe Telecom says there could be a slowdown in its service response due to the ongoing COVID surge. Globe asked for understanding from customers, saying its employees in the National Capital Region are either getting infected or are going on leave to take care of sick relatives. In the meantime, it encourages the public to utilize their digital channels from the safety of their homes. Other sectors such as banks and airlines have also been struggling with staff shortage, resulting in temporary closure or canceled flights. And before we go, the latest Spider-Man film spawned parody posters of classic fictional characters. While the actual Spider-Man No Way Home poster does not include previous Spider-Man actors Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield, the movie has made Marvel fans ecstatic by doing what was previously unthinkable, gathering past and present actors of the well-loved superhero. Thus came along a now-viral parody of Spider-Man featuring Ang Panday actors in one poster. Among those who have portrayed the legendary Filipino hero are the late Fernando Poe Jr., Philip Salvador, Joey De Leon, and Coco Martin. Another poster that went viral is the mock-up of Betty LaFea in the Multiverse of Madness. From on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Carmina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, Dateline Philippines podcast is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Play back this newscast too on ANZ's YouTube channel and on ANZ 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on the News Channel.